Okay, so guys, thank you. Welcome to our show. This is the New Gaming News podcast. We do bi-weekly. We cover esports, gambling in the esports space, sponsorships,
investments,
and other things,
anything.
Investments, anything going on. And Jen, this is, what is this, our 36th?
Maybe 35th.
35th. Okay. So yeah, so exciting for you guys to join us. Why don't we just start by, what we'll do is we're going to go through everything. We're going to go through the news of the day. We're going to, use that as a way to discuss topics and things like that from a legal perspective, Kimberly, and from a psychological perspective, Dr. Ryan. So why don't you introduce yourselves now that I gave our audience a little hint of what you do? Let us know a little bit more if you can elaborate. Ryan, why don't you start?
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I think it's legit the first podcast I've ever been on. So
that's
thank
awesome.
You.
Oh, cool. Okay.
That awesome introduction, my name is Dr. Ryan Tarao, Psych Sensei. I am an esport and clinical psychologist, so I work with players, coaches, and organizations to improve the mental health, performance, and general well-being of their players. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Kimberly?
Yeah, I'm Kimberly. My dog's barking in the background. Sorry.
That's okay.
I'm an attorney in the San Francisco Bay Area. I work with video game companies, publishers, developers, and they are very much in the esports space. So I look at esports from that perspective, and I'm really happy to be here with all three of you.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. We've covered a lot of things on the show, and there's been a lot of things in the news lately. With COVID and stuff like that, I was on a call earlier today with a company called Esports Entertainment Group. I actually wasn't on the call for them, but it was an earnings call. So they're a publicly traded company on NASDAQ, and it was quite interesting to hear this publicly traded company, which is going through a series of mergers and acquisitions. One of those companies that they bought recently is a company that Jen is associated with called Helix Esports. So there's definitely an expansion of the esports. But something I saw interesting today that were not on the list of articles that we're going to cover today was that the original projections of money that was going to be flowing into esports was around $1 billion for the year 2020. That actually now is changed, and it's now something like, $600 and something million. So drastic difference between what was projected and what, and so as we've said on the show many times, COVID has definitely had a major effect in all industries, particularly for this show, we're talking about esports. So having said that, makes a nice good segue into our first article, which is, it's about ESPN. And I just want to share my screen real quick to let you guys see the article that we're referencing, because we like to give, the person who wrote it some kind of it's the Esports Observer, and this is the ESPN confirms shutdown. So as you can see, you can see that article there. And Jen, I read a little bit of it. This is
you can give like a rundown of it. So pretty much, it's ESPN confirms future shutdown of their esports editorial operations. So they're no longer going to be publishing like their daily news or anything like that. They will still be covering big events, but no longer have their dedicated weekly news outlets. And it seems to have been a long time coming. It said that they were laying off writers, and since COVID, the impact of COVID, they've cut 10% of their staff, and esports was hit really heavily. Even though they do think it's important, it's, I guess, not enough for them to afford right now.
So, interestingly enough, I'm going to take the two perspectives. I'm going to bring this back to a situation where, like, esports before the pandemic, obviously ESPN is now cutting people because they're losing lots of revenue. But before the pandemic, we saw a lot of promise in the esports industry. Psychologically, from a corporate perspective, Dr. Ryan, where does this fall? What happens to the psyche of the community? I mean, in esports, where does this take us? Because a major label like ESPN now is now saying, hey, you know, we're going to lay off everybody in our esports sector because we don't believe in you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think globally first, just looking at the state of video games and esports pre-COVID, I remember the WHO said that video game addiction was bad. Video games were bad, and you can fall into this behaviors, be careful, loot boxes, gambling, all those kinds of things. However, as soon as pandemic hit, they're like, oh, video game good, Animal Crossing good, get to play the game and go outside virtually and have fun with your friends, socialize. So. Yeah. It's funny because whenever I'm looking at video games and video game behavior, what I'm looking at is not the playing of the video games, but I'm looking at the function of the behavior. What role is video games and playing video games fitting into this person's life? Now, with the ESPN thing, the first thing that I think of is like, dang, I can't wait. I wish we had this time machine to project forward and see the headlines of ESPN kicking themselves in the butt because some other channel, other... network has picked up esports and has really pushed it forward. I kind of see where ESPN is going on one hand as like, let's be real, esports sometimes is hard to pick up if you're an amateur watcher or a first-time watcher. Like, you can kind of understand the object of the game, but the flow of the game is a little less clear if you don't know the champions, the characters, the objects, the flow of the game versus like baseball.
Yeah.
Very linear. Hit the ball, run around the bases, catch the ball. Nine times, I'm thinking Little League, nine times and you're done, right? Or basketball, get the ball into the hoop, and if you can get the ball in the hoop more than the other team in four, you know, quarters, you win. So I think what's really hard and maybe what the networks need to do first is really educate the masses of what they're watching, how the game progresses, and really teach the outside community. Because when you do watch esports, what I'm thinking is that most of the people watching, I mean, there's The Observer, I think, does a lot of demographics of consumers. And most of these consumers are like, what, 23 to 30, like males, mostly. Right. So then the question then becomes, how can we help the broader community population understand what's going on? So I think if they went with that direction and then pushed it, because I think, don't get me wrong, I really do like the ESPN writers. I really do think that they put a lot of TLC and they have a lot of knowledge and a lot of care. At the same time, I'm not quite sure if they're writing for the general public and more so for like the people that are like esport connoisseurs. Because when I think about MMA, that's what I think about, like some of those reporters. They're very technical. They're very, you know, they go in depth with the techniques and the fights and the stats versus like, we're not there yet. Like, it's really hard. Yeah. Like MMA, it's really easy to see. It's like, you punch them, the person who gets hurt worse loses. Makes sense. Yeah. But esports is much more difficult to understand. So I think maybe if I was going to reboot it, that's where I would go, to educate the masses of what they're actually seeing.
Right.
I think that'd be really cool.
So let me ask you this, Kimberly, from a legal perspective here. Now you have a group of people, writers, esport people. And esports getting all excited because this, you know, the fact that a major media network picked up esports and was, you know, I mean, it was something that filled a void while everything else was shut down, baseball in the beginning and all the other conventional sports. Where do you think when do you think there'll be a period of time that esports is going to get that same respectability that other conventional sports does in, you know, with a media giant like ESPN?
I think there's an education gap. And, you know, to some extent, I wonder about ESPN's demographics, just in terms of its viewership and the games that it was playing. I mean, you know, take me, I'm in games, and I don't watch a lot in the way of esports, in part just because, like, the games I played and the games that I know are games I played when I was much younger. And, you know, and I'm in the space. So what's the older demographic who's on ESPN going to understand? I think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there are certain games that the younger demographic understands, but are they on ESPN? You know, I think there's a lot of younger folks who are untethered. And so they aren't on ESPN. They're on Amazon Prime and Netflix, and they don't know what ESPN is. Right. And then those who are on ESPN didn't play the games that are on ESPN. So I feel like there's an education gap sort of between what ESPN was doing and who's really excited about esports. That's sort of my perspective. But I do think there's a huge opportunity to take esports to a platform like ESPN if you're willing to educate. And I think to some extent that's an education on two levels. One, the older demographic, either giving them games they understand and they don't need as much tutorial around so they can get really excited, like, God, I played Donkey Kong when I was 10. This is cool. Mm-hmm. And then move them into games that they maybe don't naturally understand. And then educating the younger demographic about ESPN. And that might mean getting yourself on a platform where they can access it for those folks who aren't, frankly, tethered to cable.
Well, that's the other thing. Is I mean, from my perspective, you hit it right on the head. The demographics is all off. I don't care if esports was on the same level as baseball or football. In fact, you know, the numbers are showing more and more that esports is getting much more viewership than the older games like baseball and football and basketball. Those people are aging out and dying, and there's not going to be those fans to replenish because they're all going to a digital age. Now, but what I think the demographic issue is, like, people, if we're talking about video gaming and esports, I will tell any media mogul, do not place anything on a television or anything on cable. Their entire communities only live online. Only live online. The world of video gaming starts online. Why was it so, you know, why is it the pandemic is not going to affect, you know, the overall communities of video gaming because it's always lived online. Once it started online, once it went from the arcade to then being on the internet, it stayed there. It's been there. It festers there. It grows there. And, you know, when we have these big media moguls that only think linearly, they basically understand one thing. They understand what their world is, which is cable television or movies or whatever you want to put it, or, you know, TV. And the younger generations, especially, you know, in this particular case, as you said, Ryan, that age group, everything is done on the internet. Everything is done online. Your social, your world of sociability, your work, your play, your interaction, everything is done online. Even ordering food. I mean, this is where the world lives. And it's, we're in a space where we have older guys running these huge mega cable companies. And, you know, and they're really at a loss. They don't know what to do. You know, Disney has had a history in video gaming, a very bad one. And Disney owns ESPN. Disney fired, I think it was in 2016. They canned their entire game development department. And they were all in LA or something like that. I mean, do you remember that, Kimberly?
I don't, but I do know what you're alluding to, but I just don't remember.
They had a whole department for game development. Remember Skylanders?
Oh, mm-hmm. Those are cute.
Yeah, that was a Disney game. I believe so. Yeah, I think that was a Disney game. So their whole attitude is, if it's not turning a dollar now, I don't want anything to do with them.
I was just going to ask you, Ari, this sounds all great, but how are you going to make money off of it? And I was like, okay, handoff.
Right. But that's the whole thing. It's like, I mean, Ryan, you look at it from, you know, how we talk about, and Kimberly talked about, it's the wrong demographic. Yes, it was the wrong demographic. But what they're not understanding is, how do you achieve the attraction by the esport demographic to understand their world? And their world really begins with grassroots and getting involved on the community ground level.
Not, so the not, short, Yeah, so the startups that I'm working with are all, as you say, are either online. You know, they're trying to build online communities in esports, and I think that's fantastic. But it's a challenge because, you know, to the question, how do you make money? And there's that runway. So from my perspective, there is an opportunity for a large company like a Disney. It doesn't have to be to take their money and have a huge platform online and go all in on esports and get a leg up on these startups that are really trying to, you know, generate funding and a community. But to me, that's the big gap, that it's not being on television. It's finding a way to have that huge platform online.
I mean, here's where I'm going to pick in. I'm going to pick apart and niche my entrepreneurial spirit and Disney's going to be in my rearview mirror, because we're doing a GameCon, an online GameCon in February on President's Day weekend for 2021. It's a three-dimensional avatar experience like we did with the CEC, and it's a consumer conference. But what we're doing is, that's the purpose of the GameCon event, is to introduce new esports games and indie games into the marketplace. And so that people could come, they could play test them. Maybe we'll have a few tournaments of them. So Kimberly, if you have any, throw them my way. We'll get them into the platform. But it's going to be international, because it's everybody around, you know, in the whole world, since it's online.
Well so that's an interesting.
Oh no! Go for it.
Piece, just the international piece. So I have a startup that's working on player safety internationally in the esports space, you know, and trying to like make esports safe for kids to be participants, right? And so, you know, as we're talking about demographics, like really being able to give parents comfort about having their younger children being involved in that space, but providing those tools so that you don't have to worry about your 6 or 7 or 8 year old being involved in kind of an esport community. And so, you know, there are age issues, there are international issues that need to be thought through. But I think these innovative companies that are thinking through those issues are going to be able to attract a population that will stay with them.
You mean not allowing your 11-year-old to play Call of Duty and have him being screaming profanities like 24/7? My son actually did that when he was 11. He was playing Call of Duty in the basement. And I swear to God, the things that came out of his mouth, it was horrible.
I think I was doing that when I was a kid.
So what I think, Ari, you're talking about is, we're talking about large systemic culture changes. When I was listening about or thinking back about ESPN and things like that, another idea maybe they could have went with was, because ESPN is known for traditional sports, why couldn't they have played traditional sport esports? I mean, that is international in itself. They could have promoted basketball. They could promote football. They could promote FIFA during like the World Cup. This could be another thing. I mean, it's literally what they're doing digitally. And that's a nice little sidestep, or dipping the toes into the esport realm. And in the meantime, introducing fighting games, because fighting games are pretty linear too. And then after that, maybe we can get into something a little more complicated, League of Legends, Dota, StarCraft 2, maybe not StarCraft, but you know what I mean? There's a progression. You can even do racing games. And that's the same. I mean, what Kimberly is talking about is basically matching the medium with that population. So if ESPN is all about sports, let's go try that out. And then we can go in. I think that would be a really cool thing to do. But honestly, when I'm thinking about esports internationally, one of the biggest things that I'm thinking about is like Asia or like Asian countries where esports are more celebrated or accepted. And how come? Well, that's part of the culture. And right. If you think about the games that they like, most of them are team-based 5v5 type of things. And if you think about the culture, they're collectivistic, so they want to do teamwork things. So it matches the medium. So really, the question then becomes like, in America, how can we begin to either take control of this narrative? I love what Kimberly is doing, like integrating parent and child and showing how esports can really be a central tool to teach this relationship. Because really what we're doing, if you wanted to have the psychological wording for it, is now we're doing harm reduction. Because we know that video games can and do, because there's people like me working for video games. Shout out to the, what is that? The Social Dilemma. Go watch that documentary on Netflix. Super good. So like, video games designed for you to continue to play, and people want you to continue to play. So, of course, then if that's the motivation for video games to be here to make you want to play. How can we safeguard our kids to regulate them emotionally, cognitively, socially, so they can participate in video games in a more healthy manner? So, because again, if we're the other positive things is like growth. Leveling up is a physical representation of you acquiring skills. So there's so many things in video games that we can actually begin to build into this culture, so people can see this video game thing from a different light. Because people think about Donkey Kong or Pong, where it's just me and my friend, maybe, or mostly me sitting in front of a TV, where now it's a social thing. Where, I mean, back in my day, I would go online and wait on AIM, A-I-M, and wait for my friends to come in. I hear that little rink, and I'm like, oh my God, my friends are here, right? My mom's yelling at me because we had dial-up and that's the only phone line, but that's the way I would connect with my friends back in the day. Now it's just in a different medium. So really, how can we use video games as something to help us and teach us things and push us forward instead of villainizing this thing and then no one can access it?
Well, I don't think it's so villainized as much as it's like sort of just, you know, ESPN, and getting back to this article they were talking about, was that, you know, they had to fill a void. They had to fill that emptiness during COVID that, you know, there was no baseball, no conventional sports. And like you said, they didn't get the numbers that they were looking for from viewerships, Kimberly, because it was the wrong demographic. So they looked at the numbers and it was just a matter of, you know what, it didn't cut it. We didn't make any money on this. I'm going to throw this to the wind. And Jen, doesn't that sound like a very similar story to a lot of different corporations that try to get involved in video gaming and esports? They never give it a chance. They give it, you know, it's but this is the way corporations are run. I mean, am I wrong, Kimberly?
Yeah, they want the short shot.
They want the short shot. They want the money fast. I mean, how in the world do you think, like I said earlier, was how are we going to get esports to a place that has a respectability in the corporate world, in other words, money making? I mean, you're talking about these child, you know, integration with the younger kids. Is this going to take 10 years?
I think it depends on the corporate structure and the corporate culture, to be honest with you. And if you have a, you know, for lack of a better word, a stodgy culture, I think you're going to have a hard time convincing the powers that be that esports is the right move to just go all in with a big spend in terms of education and a digital platform and the whole, you know, kit and caboodle in the land of COVID, where you're not talking about, you know, tournaments and selling tickets in person and t-shirts and hats and things like that. And so, you know, the more nimble cultures are likely to be the startup culture. But that takes time, you know, that takes, you know, energy to get the technology right, to get the funding right. You're going to have some pivots in terms of the business plan, some repivots. You're going to, you know, kill the whole team and do a new team. I mean, that startup takes a while.
That's a common thing where they just can a whole team and then bring in a new team. But I've told Jen that we've read articles and seen things like that, but we think that's all about them not making any money, because they can an entire team so that they can re-sign new guys.
To sort of stretch out
that time, you know, whatever money they have left to sort of stretch out the time. Now they bought themselves a month because they have to go find another team so they can reserve that money. And then maybe in that period of time, that increment of time where they've canned all the people, they don't have anybody to pay. They go out and get investors and say, hey, look at our books. We've made money last month, you know.
Well, hold on. Are you guys talking about the professional league scene, or are you talking now, about the
now
whole thing?
I'm talking about professional leagues like Misfits and 100 Thieves and all of these different
I'll let him go first. I'll hold my two cents. Go for it. Mm-hmm. We can talk about days about this, man.
But I mean, have you been involved in any of these esport fiascos? I mean, they're in my opinion, and I've talked to Jen about this many times, is we've seen that we've always talked about authenticity in esports and video gaming and all this other stuff. If there's nothing more than I could say, that's a load of shit. Because in esports and video gaming, especially at these corporate levels that are being run by these massive, you know, companies, you know, like Misfits, and they've built that big place in Los Angeles and all this other stuff. Oh, no, that's 100 Thieves. But my point is that they're not being authentic to their investors. And investors are investing because they're being lied to. And then at the end of the day, nobody's getting their return on that investment. Where do you go? Now esports is in the tailspin.
Yeah, well, I mean, the issue's usually when the investments go south in that way is there wasn't an alignment between the message and the business plan and the execution. And there you know, almost certainly wasn't good communication between all of the relevant parties about where we're going and how we're going to get there. And so those startups, be them, you know, teams or, you know, technology companies, which is whom I'm working with, you know, that succeed, have good communication between the investors and why they're investing and the leadership team and how they're going to get there. And if you don't have that good line of communication, then things do tend to break down.
Right. So what about you, Jen? I mean, you know, we've covered this before. I mean, and you've run tournaments and everything like that. I mean, what have you said on your from your perspective, like, how do you see the legitimacy and the authenticity actually being there at some point? Because as Kimberly said, they're not following through on those business plans.
I think it just depends. I think some are working and some aren't, and it's still kind of unknown. They still kind of don't know what's working and what's not, because I see kind of off the wall sponsors and advertisements and like media plans and content creation plans, and it's just kind of like all over the place. I think that it will get where it needs to be, because as it gets more exposure in the mainstream media, and that by it I mean esports, as it gets more exposure and makes more money, there are more people into it, and it is like, it does have more eyes on it. So I think it's just a slow roll to get better and more organized.
But I, like, as Ryan, we heard earlier in the show, I talked about the problem with the psyche of the communities. Then don't they feel like sort of like, oh, we failed because, you know, we're not following through on our business plans. We're closing our doors. We're firing our team. I mean, this is blatant stuff.
Some aren't.
Yeah.
I feel like that I think it's hard to say, because I think they just don't know what they don't know. And I think it's one of those cases. And when I think about it's so funny, the current state of esports, when you're just mentioning it with people getting fired and getting hired and all this kind of stuff, and they talk about transparency, authenticity, it's a bunch of bullshit. What I think is really, really funny is that, like, as you're saying all these things, it's like, oh, that's exactly how we draft NA League of Legends. Like, we just try to import players instead of investing in player development, but we want to turn a profit, but our team's not winning. So if we don't have a winning team, then we're going to replace people. But really, what we need to do is, like, sure, I think, yes, we do need to invest money. At the same time, what I think we need to invest money in is actually growing it. Because when we talk about player development, what does that mean? They have a nutritionist and they have a sports psychologist and a coach?
There are, like, certain companies that are doing more for that and more for, like, the amateur players.
Jen actually runs a camp. Jen actually runs an educational program to teach esports to younger kids.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's definitely one of the first steps, or even blowing up that like, we just are importing talent. We need to grow talent. But at the same time, to answer your question, that takes time. How much time? I've had to ballpark it. If you really want to start over and blow the whole thing up, it's going to take at least a year and a half, 2 years.
Because young talent has to grow up too and get discovered.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. Like, the thing with, like, just take, okay, players. That's one whole thing. But now let's take coaches.
Right.
Can, like, what does it mean to be a coach? You're just in charge of people, that you know the meta and you know the strategy. Can you actually teach these players what you need to? Can you teach them how to think? Can you teach them how to be a good teammate? All of these things goes into coaching.
You know, it's a big leap from when they had the Atari tech people on the phone or whatever, and they would call them when they had a problem with the game,
funny
and somebody
enough,
would have to go through it. But
Call of Duty League is doing that right now. They partnered with Verizon Wireless so that people could send in messages to a phone number and ask for tips on games. It's like a novelty thing right now. I think that's funny that you just said that.
But it does keep it relevant. That's an old school move.
I thought that when I was reading it.
That's definitely an old school move. Which is what, but you know, as I was saying, I see so much being built at the top. I mean, as you're saying, Ryan, there's not enough going on at the bottom. And we have to build the bottom, the foundation of the building first.
Absolutely.
So that it can grow up to be a huge skyscraper. Which is why go ahead, Kim.
I was going to say, Jen mentioned something about sponsorships and endorsements. And I do think that's part of the bottom in terms of the matching between those who are doing the sponsoring and esports. So like I saw a new Bud Light sponsorship, you know, and that makes sense. You know, I mean, alcohol and video games, unfortunately, have a nice synergy. Keyboards and esports do, but I don't think that that drives sort of excitement in the same way that a consumer good like an alcoholic beverage would drive sort of
attention. And it's not as every day attention. Either. It's not as, it is a lifestyle thing, but it's not as every day. Like, you're not going to keep buying keyboards, but you're going to keep buying Bud Light or whatever.
Yep. And so when you see an esports, a celebrity or a team or an event or whatever the relationship is on your bottle of beer, to your point, Jen, and you're buying it weekly, you're getting that, you know, reintroduction every week, as opposed to your point, a keyboard that you're going to buy once and you're going to see the logo on the back of the package one time. So I do think that there's a strategy there that perhaps could be executed better in terms of the sponsorship endorsement piece to bring esports to more people.
It depends. I bring this up all the time because I think it was a really good move, but 100 Thieves did a Tostino's Pizza Rolls thing where they just like were sponsored by Tostino's and then had a food fight with them. And that was the content. And I bring it up a lot because I think it was so genius. I loved it.
Yeah, that was actually that's actually a great opportunity to sponsorship. But what I was going to get at before was that, you know, this whole concept of the way esports is the direction that it goes in, a lot of the times it's compared to conventional sports. And one gentleman who posted an article,
Segway.
Yeah, it's called "When We Will Get Rid of Esports." Now, interestingly, the article was written by Wouter Seligifelers. He's the CEO of Excel. I think he's actually, let me share my screen. He is based in, I think he's based in Europe, obviously, but Norway. He's with Excel Esports. And it's a very lengthy article.
I can sum it up.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Jim.
He pretty much goes through his five P's for his business and how he's growing it. The five P's being passion, professionalism, power brands, purpose, and profit, aka like the matureness of your company. And he was pretty much saying that we should stop calling it esports because it's really nothing like sports and start calling it competitive gaming again. He goes into like how Twitch is the standard way of viewing things. I don't know if that's completely relevant to what we're talking about, but we were kind of talking about Twitch earlier, how you're going to be watching your esports on Twitch and it's so established and things like that. And then he kind of goes into how he says that you should let go of anything that you think will make you successful. And I think that's relevant to like sponsors going into esports and any kind of investment in general. Like, don't go in what you think will be successful, and it has to come from the heart, and that goes back to authenticity too. It's like such a buzzword, but it's so true, and everybody says it, and that's pretty much what he's saying too.
Yeah, but I think that, you know, when we talk about authenticity in the space, and you know what I was mentioning it before, is authenticity's been twisted. It's been twisted by big money in this country. It's been twisted by the passion. You know, obviously there's lots of passion in esports, there's lots of passion in video gaming, but in order to survive, in order to make it, yes, that passion and that experience on how to get investors involved had to be expanded, and maybe some promises that were given that really couldn't be followed up on, as you mentioned, Kimberly, these business plans that were not executed properly and still haven't been in many cases. But yet there's still investment going on. And these investors are there saying, I'm in the 10-year plan, that I'm going to get my money back at some point. But what he's saying in this article,
we need to stop calling it esports and call it competitive gaming.
Right.
What was the gripe with that? Just because they don't do physical stuff?
Because it's not the electronic version of sports. He said it's not the digital version of sports. Even though some technically are, like FIFA, Madden. He's like, it is competitive gaming.
Right. I mean,
It's so interesting that people get stuck on that label, and I'm wondering why.
Yeah, it's a whole article dedicated to it.
Yeah.
So I can say there's legal scholarship going back and forth about whether or not esports is sports and whether or not it's helpful to be regulatory in the regulatory world of sports, or whether it's better to be in sort of the world of contest, just from a regulatory perspective. And so to some extent, you know, the labels have had to do with projections about where are we going to be able to be the most nimble from a legal perspective, given that sports has laws and contests have laws, and they're not necessarily the same thing. And there's you know, I can't do them justice, but there's some really excellent pieces of legal scholarship debating exactly this question. Should it be gaming or should it be sports from the perspective of, you know, where the laws are? I would hope the answer is let's figure out what the right word is and put the legal arguments aside and say whatever we've named it, you know, doesn't make it this thing from a legal perspective. And I think that that's a fine enough answer, frankly.
I would just call it competitive gaming. And that's just what Jen says, because I honestly don't like the word sport. I don't like the fact that it's called esports. I never have. It's only something I refer to on the show.
Definition of sport, though? It's just competitive gameplay.
It is, but from the conventional way that we've been to understand sport, also, you know, you could hunting for deer is considered sport.
Sport is an activity involving physical exertion and skill in which an individual or team competes against another for entertainment. So it is esports.
I feel like that, like, just thinking about this conversation, the direction it's going and how it splits people, I think the whole, like, it's almost like a red herring to me. Mm-hmm. The calling it what it is, like an esport or sport, and then you have traditional people saying, oh, it's not a sport, and esports being like, I don't see why not. And it's even more funny, Kim, I'd love to see the scholars on how to spell
it.
Like, just how to spell it. Like, there's a big argument on that, too. So,
yeah.
With the lowercase e, capital S.
Thank you. Unless it's a proper noun. But, like, for people to get upset about why, I think maybe that's even, like, even, I'm glad we're having this conversation, because maybe we're even hitting on how can we expand the mindset of esports. Because maybe I'm thinking about ESPN, too. Oh, they're playing esports. Oh, that's not a real thing. I'm not going to watch that. So it almost creates this barrier of entry to people that actually maybe are into seeing it or watching it. Because I remember the first time I played, Madden 98 on a PlayStation 2 at my grandpa's house. He goes, oh, is that the game? I'm like, no, we're playing this right now. Gung Gung, like, this is a video game. He's like, what? So, I mean, even, like, the discussion of this is a sport, it's not a sport. Like, to me, it's a non-issue. Because there are things that are happening in esports. I mean, I don't know the legal stuff. That's a whole, I didn't even think about that. That's crazy. Yeah. But I think it's like thinking about at the heart of esports and sports, what is happening? And then why does a label matter? You know,
from a business perspective, Ryan, it matters enormously. And I'll tell you what, because up until this entire phenomenon that we call esports was called esports, it was called competitive video gaming, and no one wanted to invest in it.
At the same time, what's kind of junk is I'm thinking about, like, collegiate right now, and dude, we're calling football a sport and making it varsity, but those kids aren't getting paid, man, and they get injured. And I'm thinking about esports now, they don't have nothing. So
they
wouldn't this label kind of rise, like, wouldn't this tide rise all ships?
Yeah,
with NCAA and to being all sports and having more inclusivity. But that makes sense of, like, these small little nuances, but when it comes to me and psychology and thinking about why does it matter, for me it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but in order to attract the older crowds, the guys with the money, the guys that invested in the New England Patriots, you know, Robert Kraft, the guys that invested in the Dallas Mavericks, you know, Mark Cuban, these guys, in order to attract them, they had to call it something that was buzzworthy, you know. And by calling it esports, it's like, oh, well, these guys are already invested in sports. Well, what's this? It's just an electronic version of the game that you've already invested in. So it's not too far removed from what they're already doing. I mean,
so I'm thinking then, doesn't that mean then we should be educating these people investing and changing their mindsets about how they see esports? Because even if they do throw money at it, if they don't understand what it is, their money's going to go to waste. They're going to be hiring staff that don't understand games. They're going to be hiring other people who don't really care about the players and just want to make money, which is really at the heart of the problem esports is having. It's all about money. It's all about money, but there's no talk about developing.
Now, if you ask Mark Cuban today what he thinks about esports, he'd tell you to basically F up.
For sure. I mean, I don't want to be a hater, but some of his designs for that, like, triple commas were atrocious, but that's just me. So I mean, even that, like, dude, if you can't even design a jersey that gamers want, that want apparel, you're doing something wrong, bro. So you're investing in something that you don't understand. And I mean, that's kind of what Shark Tank is. They're like investing in stuff they don't like. If they understand it, then they like it. But if they don't understand it or see the potential in it, scrub daddies, then like it doesn't go through. So
really, well, so to pile on to what Ryan's saying. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Go for it.
No, I was going to say, from the marketing perspective, you know, a marketing team will take 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 concepts and test them. You know, to your point about jerseys, which jersey do fans like the most? Which team name do fans like the most? Which ad content gets the most clicks before you then spend the big dollars to push that ad out? So, you know, if naming is a hiccup, a hurdle to getting esports to the masses and harkening back to ESPN, to bringing it to a broader audience, test the name, rebrand it. Why not?
Yeah, there's not a lot of due diligence, in my opinion, from a lot of these guys that do invest in these companies. You know, the ones I know that are very successful is Team Liquid, you know, and then there's others as well. But they are the ones that are sort of leading the charge with all the different, you know, hiccups and problems. And sometimes I would say, and I've mentioned this to Jen before, it's not the actual team itself or the logo, right? It's the people running it that really matter, make the difference.
Yep, absolutely.
So, yeah. So let's we're going to move on to this next article.
I think maybe in lieu of time, because that's really quick, I could just mention it and then we can go on to the other one for discussion.
Sure.
Pretty much with this is just for the gambling listeners. The Daily Fantasy Sports Operator Prize Picks entered into a partnership with Atlanta-based esports organization Ghost Gaming. And pretty much they're trying to establish a dominant hub of fantasy sports and esports in the Southwest. So I just like seeing esports betting in general kind of like developing in the U.S. And that's why I wanted to add it, but it's not, unless anybody has anything to say about it. But
well, I also saw something, interestingly enough, I did see something about young kids gambling parents' money away in the U.S. And that's a big problem too.
When?
Somebody posted it. I saw an article about it. I think it was earlier this morning on LinkedIn, but this is becoming, you know, an issue as well. I mean, Ryan, you know, from a psychological perspective, you know,
makes sense. I mean, yeah. Last year I was working at a college. I was working at USC, and we would have discussions because kids would come in and we would just talk. And there was a story about kids in elementary school or middle school crying and kind of like just stole their parents' credit card, spent a lot of money. And when they like parents confronted them, they said, "Mom, Dad, they're calling me a basic at school at Fortnite because I play Fortnite and they call me a basic. No, not basic. They call me a default. They call me default. Like, oh, what's a default? Oh, I don't have any skins. And so I'm just like a default player."
Right.
I was like, that's a thing now that because video games are becoming such an ingrained part in
like
our culture.
It's like the new not having name brand clothes.
Absolutely. Right. Or the new Tamagotchi or the new Switch, anything. It's the same kind of thing. So, I mean, if you think about brains and brain development, also impulse control, thinking, that's not developed at all. So if you want something, I'm going to get it. And I'm not thinking about the ramifications because not cooked. So it makes sense in why it's bad. And at the same time, when you think about those things that maybe entice gambling or re-rolls and these kinds of things, the kids can't put together what that money and that means. It's not there.
And not only that, I mean, these are huge legal ramifications, Kimberly, for some of these betting platforms. I mean, maybe you could expand a little more about like some of these issues. I mean, I was on an early earnings call for EEG earlier today, and they had an audit in London for one of their companies that they own. This is a major conglomerate of many, I think it was Argyle Group or something like that. But they had an audit because the British government wanted to make sure that they by.gg they weren't taking bets from younger people.
Yeah. I mean, kids on platforms where they can spend money it's an issue. I mean, it is an issue. So, you know, my gaming clients, for the most part, we say you have to be 13 or older to play, and they'll pull under 13s off because, you know, they don't want to deal with complying with COPPA, and you don't want to deal with refunds from, you know, 6 and 7 year olds who got a hold of mom and dad's, you know, password. Yeah. And there've been lawsuits around even the question around consent, whether or not, children can consent to a EULA in the first place. And right. So there is risk. I mean, there is known risk to anyone, you know, in the digital space taking money from children.
Right.
And the easiest answer is to not to.
A couple years ago, I was in Washington, D.C. at the Consumer Protection Agency. And they have a big building downtown Washington, D.C. Went there. There was a whole seminar and they had professors and everything from like Columbia University, Oxford, and talking about loot boxes and the whole issue of whether that was gambling or not gambling. And we heard both sides. We heard the side of, you know, the professors and the colleges that have proved that it is gambling. And then we heard from the publisher's side, which is, got a very large lobbyist group, or Software Association
ESA,
the Electronic Software Association. So there was a representative there, and they actually gave the other side in the afternoon. I mean, it's a major problem. Yeah.
And so, and the FTC said that they weren't making any changes. There were no rule changes as a result of that. Day-long event on loot boxes. But there's pending litigation in California around whether or not loot boxes in a mobile game are gambling. You know, EA has you know, been sued a couple times recently over their loot boxes.
They just recently had an issue as well.
They just had another Battlefront rip.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's litigation over this, regardless of where the FTC came out. And there will continue to be litigation over loot boxes until we start to see court opinions on the question. I'd be curious, Dr. Ryan, sort of your thoughts on loot boxes and gambling, because it's a question that comes up. From my perspective, there are mechanics where I look at it, I'm like, that's not gambling. I don't care if it's a loot box. No way, no how, none whatsoever. And there are others where I was like, oh, all right, I get the argument.
Yeah, for sure. There's very... very interesting things out there. Like, I know for CSGO a little bit, there was the crash betting. So that's definitely gambling for sure. Loot boxes. I mean, if you think about what a loot box is and things like that, there is a kind of, or from my perspective at least, there is kind of that, the same kind of mechanic of like pulling a slot machine.
Lever, right.
Exactly. Pulling the lever and seeing what you kind of get and spinning it. And there is risk because there may be in-game currency or real currency that's being traded for more boxes. The randomness. And then again, what are you using that? Like, for me, it's like, what is the behavior? Like, what are you using that behavior for? Are you using it for risk and trying to get these things? Are you using the X thing to get money and cash out, like crash betting? That's exactly what it is. So some of them seem like I can understand why it is like gambling, but at the same time, other things like that, the controversy of, I believe it's EA and Star Wars Battlefront, like that's a huge one where the game was basically like based off what you get in the boxes. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to also consider like, what is the value of what's actually in the box? Is it just a purely like skin and it doesn't count for anything, you can't trade in for real currency, or is there like you need special characters in these specialized boxes to play and the chances of you getting these characters are very, very low. So I think there's also like, there used to be Quid, it was a trading app that you could have like cute little stickers and things where like people pay money and that's gambling. So right. Really, like how much does this game depend on utilizing what's in the box? Because I think if it does rely a lot, then probably gambling
And you know, I have to say, I gotta say this. And you know, I know that the publishers have really tried to keep their distance from the gambling world. But time and time again, they're getting brought in by these, you know, by all of these whistleblowers. And what I've said to on the show before is that one of the reasons why we started the Casino Esport Conference was to show that if these publishers were smart, they would partner with the gambling industry, legitimize what they're doing, create a version, and I've called this the three versions of their game. They could have a child safe version, a competitive version, and a gambling version. And that gambling version would only be obviously anyone 18 or older, or based on the age of the person who would be able to play in the state by state. So there needs to be way more litigation, way more concentration on these laws and separating it so that there's clear defined law that states who can, what can be played, what's being gambled for. And I mean, isn't that the right step to take? And why has this been such a problem? And they're not wanting to embrace this. Is this because publishers don't want to share their IP with the gambling world?
I don't think it's that. I mean, I think publishers are really comfortable being in their space, and gambling seems like a space that's different. It's a different industry. We're not doing gambling. We're doing gaming. And I do think it's at that level. I do think the publishers have been very focused on consumer protection and being upfront with consumers. And so one of the things that came out of the Battlefront loot box issue and others related to it was publishers have been much, much better about disclosing the odds of getting different things in the box. Yes. So that consumers know the odds of getting a particular weapon or skin or whatever the things are in the box. I think that's fantastic. So I think the publishers have just been focused in, if you will, staying in their lane, and their lane is video games, and how can they do this particular mechanic in a way that's fair to the consumer. And the FTC has essentially said, we're not passing new regulations because we're not going to change anything. So that's why you're not seeing new laws.
Yeah. Mm. But your go ahead.
I got a question for you then, Ari, because it sounds like it's kind of linking this idea with the esports argument idea. So like, you know how maybe esports, the term turns some people off, but like, oh, this is not a sport. I'm wondering, first of all, great idea. I like that idea. It's really cool giving them the options of like, this for kids, this for adults, whatever. The question is though, if they actually partnered with like gambling actually partnered with the gaming companies and said like, oh, we've worked this out. These things are gambling. I wonder how that would affect parents like and their perception of the game if they acknowledge that this was sanctioned gambling. But here's a safe version for you.
Well, that's a good question, because how do you think they feel about people betting on baseball? And their kid plays Little League.
Oh, that's true. I've never heard of legal Little League gambling, though.
There isn't. But that's my point.
There was,
that's my point. I mean, it's the same game, but you're playing, it's just, this is for kids, and everybody knows you don't bet on your little kid playing Little League or T-ball, but you do bet on the big boys that are playing in the big stadiums.
We do have a version already in the gaming industry of exactly what Ari's talking about. So, you know, you can play Angry Birds on your phone, you can play Angry Birds in the Oculus Quest, and you can play Angry Birds at Dave & Buster's on a big enormous screen with the, you know, you pull back the little slingshot. And so taking a piece of intellectual property and moving it into different spaces, we already have the framework for doing that. And so if you were to take Angry Birds and move it into the slot machines or move it into some digital, you know, pull back the slingshot where you're betting, it's going to be in the casino part where, the 8-year-old's not going to be. So in theory, they're not going to see it. So that idea of moving IP around onto different platforms is out there. And so I too like Ari's idea. I think it's a question of sort of lane staying, right? We see the slingshot at Dave & Buster's for the 8-year-olds because that's still games for kids. The gambling question, it's a great question.
Well, that's what I meant, Kimberly, that there's a lane for the same intellectual property, but these lanes are particularly for different age groups. Mm-hmm. That's the same IP. So anyway, let's go. We're going on to, interesting enough, All Eyes on Esports, staying ahead of legal hurdles. I just want to, interesting. We're gonna share that article here.
Yeah, we did go over a few things just naturally in our conversation that just happened that this article covers. They have about four specific things that they talk about, and that being like hosting tournaments, gambling, player contracts, and working with minors.
Right.
So first, it talks about hosting esports competition and how you can like protect yourself from legal ramifications, and it kind of goes into how when you're hosting a tournament as a company, you do need the authorization from the game maker.
Right. Well, Psyonix is one of the publishers that's sort of, you know, really pulling in the reins on Rocket League, so that there isn't a lot. You know, they're setting parameters, so that if it's something more than, let's say, $5,000 prize pool, you know, then they're gonna have you sign a bespoke agreement. I'm not sure what that is. Maybe Kimberly, you can sort of expand on what a bespoke agreement is.
Yeah, it'd be a unique agreement between that tournament organizer and the publisher. And so essentially the publisher has said in the EULA, this is what's permissible from a streaming perspective, from a tournament perspective. And most publishers have done that already. It's in the EULA. But the idea is that I've used this analogy before, that at Chase Center, if Chase Center in San Francisco were to say, we're going to pack the stadium and we're going to sell tickets and we're going to hot dogs and beers and the whole thing, the publisher's like, well, I want some of that action. And that makes sense, because the publisher owns the intellectual property. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, the publisher's saying, if you're the local high school and you want to have an event as a fundraiser for the school, have at it. We're not gonna come after you as long as you're below these limits. And each publisher is gonna have their own EULA for what's acceptable and for what's unacceptable. And again, they own the IP, so there's an argument that they're being generous insofar as they're allowing some activity that they could choose not to anyways. And the reason why they do it is because it still makes them money. It gets them players, it gets them fans, it gets enthusiasm, and so why not?
So, you know, and then from a psychological perspective, if we take this from the higher the prize pool, you know, the more people you'll get, I guess there's more pressure also on players. Am I right, Ryan?
Oh, for sure. Whenever there's a competition, there's going to be pressure. And as soon as you make the stakes higher, of course, there's going to be more stress, and because you care about it. So it makes sense. I just think it's really funny or really, really interesting that like the NBA can't take away basketball. But Riot could be like tomorrow, like, no, no more TFT, no more League, no more Runeterra. Yeah. That's it. And it's gone. And you can never get it back again. But then again, if you know, probably make Dota 2 again, because it was still,
which is interesting because you know, you bring up that point, but that brings us up to, you know, the article that was written by, about calling esports. You know, there's so many different things in esports, and that's why I think people have a problem with calling esports is because there's so many different games, so many different, like, the intricacies are not the same.
Yeah,
as regular conventional sports.
Nobody made basketball. And if you're doing a local basketball tournament, it's nowhere near the NBA's production value. So it is different because games are actually a product.
Right, right. So yeah. I think from that perspective, I don't know if we'll ever find the right name for competitive video gaming.
Yeah.
But I'll let it alone for now. We'll call it esports as it is, because I don't want to really rock the boat. And write an enormous article like that was written by who was it, by Wooter. You know, I listen, it's, in my opinion, overall, I think that we've gotten some really great points on these articles that we discussed, and you know, these are things I think that will eventually sort of pan their way out, but you know, again, as Kimberly mentioned, she has startups that are creating new esports games. You know, only what, 2, 3, 4 years ago, Rocket League was an indie game as well. And so here we are now with Rocket League being one of the most widely known games in the world. And there will be more. And that's another thing that makes it different. So the whole question, and this has been sort of like one for the ages, is it entertainment? Is it sports? Is it pure, you know, just, you know, fun? And in my opinion, I'm going to just say that it's fun. It's fun. And that's really what makes the difference between, you know, where we are with conventional sports. Because conventional sports, when you get to the big boy leagues, when you get to the college levels, when you get to the pro leagues, this is big business. We're talking about when you become a conventional athlete, you are now a commodity of everything, of the investors that want to hire you on their team, of the bookies that are betting that you're not going to break your leg, of so many different things. I believe that esports will get there as well.
That's pretty much what they're saying in it. They're like, it just needs to mature. The market just needs to mature. Everything needs to mature.
But it's almost as if we're too anxious to make it happen quicker.
We're too anxious for the next thing. We don't even know what's going on now.
I definitely would say it's D, all the above, and I would agree that it's too soon to tell, because I think it's definitely like the 1930s or 40s of traditional sports in esports. That's where we are. It's very new. And I think, like you said earlier, it's about the money. How can we monetize this? We have a thing. How can we push it and make sure we make the money back? And it's all about capitalism and money. But the challenge is now that, I mean, traditional sports had so many years to mature, like you've said. The question is now, how can we build a sustainable, because that it's not just about the money, but how can we build a sustainable ecosystem focused on, I wouldn't say even authenticity, on development and growth. And instead of putting money first. But I think right now what they're trying to do is run into it to make as much money. But as you can tell, the people who are out in for money don't make great teams, and then they go poof. So I think that's where we are definitely at. Sure, I think we're trying to move this really, really fast. But at the same time, you definitely need to spend some time, which is, I guess, in turn money, in growing this thing and doing it right in its correct context with the correct population to push it forward. And then for the older generations, making sure those esports or those competitive games get pushed forward so they get to also dip their toes into esports and understanding. And then we can start creating that social change, that cultural change that we were talking about earlier to, again, make all of its ships rise on this esports or sports thing.
You know, it's funny because if you look to the East, and we look at what I mean by East, I'm talking about places like Japan, Singapore, Korea. They have amazing esports programs. And, you know, one of the things, the biggest thing I've seen is that 20, 30 years ago in this country, we used to have arcades. There were video arcades everywhere. And why are they not here anymore? They went away because people will blame the internet, but it was only basically because, you know, they weren't making enough money. Now they're coming back. Bar arcades are coming back. But arcades never left Japan. Sega has 5 levels of games of an entire building that you can go and play games, different levels of different games. And it's the culture here shifts on the change of a dime. And you're right, Ryan, it is always run by how much money can we possibly make? And it's not by the passion of the only thing I could say in this country that's really survived based on passion is Disney. I think Disney will never, think about Disney is that no one gets tired of the mouse. They just don't.
No, it's even risk going catching COVID to go see that thing, man. It's true.
Yeah. You're right. So it's I gotta give it to that to those guys that they definitely have something that they've built on. But then again, it didn't even stay in their lane, so to speak, Kimberly. Well, they expanded into everything else. But in Japan, Sega stays in their lane. We make games, and that's what we do.
I mean, if you, so I'll go for it.
I should say, I think that is the opportunity of esports, is to think bigger than my lane. You know, so, you know, esports, what's the goal? I think the goal is to entertain. You know, I think it is D all of the above, but for me, it is entertainment. So how do you get the spectators involved in a way where if you go to a baseball game, you don't get to interact with the players. You don't get to play the game on your own console while you're watching it on the screen. You know, so how do you create an environment physically and right now digitally where as a spectator, you can be part of the action, part of the fun. And so I think thinking about what's the end goal and then back yourself into it. And for all the things we've talked about, there's branding issues, there's business plan issues, there's investment issues, there's training issues, but what's the end goal? From my perspective, it's the Disneyland of video games. Like, how do you get to the point where people are just, they're doing all the things, they're having all the fun. Even if you're kind of there to ride, Star Wars or, Space Mountain or Pirates of the Caribbean.
And if you go on the mind of Disney, if you really think about why Disney's able to survive, think of Disney's target population. They're little people, they're kids.
Yeah.
And so you feed this kid, like you feed the story to the child, you see the movies and you grow up, then that adult now who's been indoctrinated into the Disney cult per se, teaches their kid about Disney and all those kinds of things too. So if you think of like, and Disney's all about storytelling. They're telling story and controlling a narrative, so it's a marketing dream.
It is.
It's like, until esports can do that same thing, or video games, or what do you want to call it, can do that same type of thing. And I think maybe now we're getting there because video games has progressed and now it's being passed down generations, so maybe we're getting there. But if it's looking at that Disney example, that's exactly how you do it. You have to change that.
I actually think Epic has a very, 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 very great window if they were smart enough and they were able to do this.
Yeah, I think Epic is crushing it because they're already expanding outside of gaming and they're doing digital experiences.
Digital experiences, but their characters, if they create their characters, you know, Disney created Cinderella and all the other princesses. Every girl, like, associates themselves with one of those princesses. And, you know, the concept of the Cinderella wedding and all of that stuff when they get married. It's so indoctrinated into the culture of the American society. But if Epic begins to start putting in these characters in their Fortnite game, that girls can associate themselves
with. I think
what
Epic is doing is they're more trying to make everybody feel like an individual rather than trying to give out characters. They want you to be you. What they're doing with characters is probably pulling it from other things, but I think them creating original ones, while it's not the worst idea, I think that by them creating original skins, like, you're always updating who you are, just like in real life.
Well, again, is that if you look to the east, they have created tons of characters. Mario, Lynx, all of the
not
different
Epic.
Characters. Yeah, but this is not the Epic Games. I'm talking about, Konami and Sega and all of the different, and Bandai Namco. All of these gaming companies created characters that people did connect themselves with.
But then the question then becomes, though, like, how many, like, thinking about the target demographic and the marketing, how many people are actually into the story? Because, I mean, I'm sure people are into the story in Call of Duty, but I bet you the majority of people just want to buy it so they can play multiplayer.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure there's, like, League of Legends lore people, and I'm sure that because there's so many champions and so much lore, but how many people actually know that lore versus, like, I'm going to go in here and I know these items and I know this is
a
strategy?
I've been to tons of anime conferences and I've seen a lot of Ryu, so trust me. They connect with the characters.
Oh, they connect with the character, but, like, I mean, that's like when you go to the convention, you're going to a concert, that's your target population, so you know that. But, like, the regular person probably can pick up Cinderella, I know the story. I got that. So really what we're talking about is story and narratives, and then how can we make people care about the story and the narrative? Because like was just mentioned, is like the individuality, and that's the value that's coming out. That's the thing that's being featured. It's not a story of Fortnite. Mm-hmm. It's you can be whoever you want in this world. It's an immersive digital experience versus, this is the story. And maybe the one player games, I'm thinking about Call of Duty, I'm not, Valhalla that just came out for, I'm forgetting the name.
New consoles.
That's the one. Yes. So they have a story that you follow, but that's literally what you go for there. There's no competitive part of that story. So I think that's balancing the narrative of a story to build a character in versus a competitive gameplay like League of Legends or Call of Duty.
And even League of Legends does like carry their lore just by like branching out into music and stuff. Like, I don't play League of Legends, but you know I'm listening to KDA. Like,
yeah, and that's the guy going out and taking over a different lane, right? They, instead of going for League of Legends, now they're into like K-pop and they just ran with that bad boy. And there's a whole like group of people
that people love that. It.
Yeah, there's love definitely. It. I agree so much, Kimberly, with the expansion of the IP into different lanes, and it's going to happen, and you're going to see it happen in many spaces, in music, in theater, and in movies, in TV.
And it's always been happening, even like Jetsons and Flintstones crossover.
And there's going to be that competitive space. But what I would ever say for all the investors that are watching the show, people who are looking to get into esports, is remember, esports is only 10% of the video gaming world. And what we've covered on this show is that there's an expansive and way more intellectual properties that cover all types of entertainment as a whole. And if you want to get involved in it from that level, not get involved in it from the 10% level, because it's all flowing from one section to the other, from competitive to entertainment, from entertainment to competitive, and pretty much that's why we have the show, to inform people that it's definitely something that they should look to the future, and esports as a competitive side, and the entertainment as a whole growing for years to come. Dr. Ryan, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show. Kimberly Culp, where can our followers find you if you want to give us a little bit of where they can connect with you?
So,
go ahead, Kimberly.
Okay, I'm an attorney. I'm at the law firm Carr McClellan. The easiest probably place to find me is on Twitter. I'm at CulpK, CULPK, and I'm on LinkedIn too for the business folks who want some legal updates in the game space.
Nice. You can find me on Twitch at Psych Sensei on Twitch. I have a same thing for Twitter. That's where you can mostly find me. And if I'm speaking to any investors, help me, I'm poor. And also, the way to get, I think one of the biggest things, if you want to really get into esports, the question should not be, how can I make money? But really, the question should be like, how would you like to invest in growing this space? Because if you invest your money to grow the space, I promise the money will come back to you. And if you didn't, it will be a learning experience for all of us. And please still help me, I'm poor. That's it for me.
All right, that's been our show for tonight. I'd like to thank my co-host, as always, Jen Yuchin. Thank you very much to our guest, Dr. Ryan.
Thank you.
One thing I have to say to everybody is that, thank God, everybody stay safe. It's good that you guys are safe. Stay healthy. If there's one thing we have to learn, is that money's never going to make you happy. Only happiness will make you happy. And we can find that in our own backyard. So good luck. Everybody, have a great week. We'll see you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.